Chuck Norris came to me the other day. He said, "John, I need some tools to help me hack VMware." And so I got to work. Mike. But that's not entirely what happened. In fact, it's not at all what happened. But just in case Chuck comes round, I've got some stuff ready for him. So this evening we're going to take a look at VMware. We're going to look at some ways of attacking VMware networks. And I'll also show you the tools that I've developed to help us do this. So afterwards, hopefully you'll all be elite VMware hackers, able to own an entire network just by popping the one box. My name's John Fitzpatrick. I work as a pen tester for MWR Info Security in the UK. For the last 6 months or so, I've spent all of my spare hours battling against VMware's APIs. And in the process, I've found some pretty interesting stuff. And it's my intention today to share this with you. We'll demonstrate some of the potential attack vectors. Hopefully you'll learn something interesting. The slides have changed slightly from what's on the DVD, but not massively. But the latest slides will be available to pull down from our website, and I'll give you the URLs at the end. And as was mentioned, I'll be in the QA room afterwards if anyone's got any questions. So why VMware? Well, virtualization's taken off. Virtualization's taken off, and it's rare that I go on a pen test now and not see some form of virtualization. Normally it's VMware. In fact, this research was all kicked off when I was on a pen test, and I gained access to VMware Server Console, but the desktop was locked, and it meant if I wanted to get anywhere with that, I'd have had to boot the guy off that was on the box. Which probably wasn't a good idea. In this case, it wasn't such a problem. We could gain access to the box in other ways. But I thought, well, if that comes up again in the future, I want to be able to get on this box and I want to have a play. So I guess probably a lot of you have played about with VMware before. Some of you maybe have got virtualized networks back in your office or wherever you work. Well, the structure of the presentation, we're going to start by looking at VMware, the different flavors, and some of the key concepts. We'll move on to VMware Server. We'll look at some ways of attacking that. And I've got about six demos in total to show you, so hopefully they'll all run fine. Some of these demos are for ESX, and we'll look at ESX, some of the different attack vectors for that. And we'll move on to a tool which was developed by a colleague of mine called Dradis, which is a good tool for information sharing, sort of structuring your information whilst you're on a pen test. And then, of course, we'll shift on to some recommendations afterwards and see how you can sort of help protect yourself if you're running VMware. Right, well, we'll kick off with an introduction to VMware. There's loads of different flavors of VMware, but here's a few listed here. You start off with the basic player, which is there simply to play virtual machines. Workstations, perhaps a step up from that. You've got far more functionality there. You can create snapshots, that kind of thing. VMware Server, or kind of what used to be called GSX, and ESX, I guess, are the two main ones. They're the ones I'm interested in anyway, because they're the ones that expose the service on the network, and so purely because of that, they provide something that we can attack. So we're going to look at server and ESX today. So the key concept with virtualization, you have one server which can run multiple guest operating systems. So essentially, one piece of hardware can be many, many boxes on your network. In fact, with VMware's virtual infrastructure, this kind of comes out more in a many-many relationship. Perhaps you'll run multiple ESX boxes, again with multiple operating systems on it. Well, VMware Server looks something like this. You've got your hardware. On top of that, you'll install your operating system, whether this be Windows, Linux, whatever. The operating system's the light blue layer at the bottom. On top of that, you'll install VMware Server, and then on top of that, you can create your virtual machines, which all have their own operating system and whatever applications you're running on them. Now, ESX is slightly different. ESX, well, essentially is the operating system. So by running ESX, you strip out one layer of the complexity there. Your virtual machines therefore can talk to ESX, which can talk directly to the hardware. So if you want to give 2 gig of RAM to a virtual machine, it's got no operating system to contend with for that RAM. It can talk directly to ESX, which will give it the RAM it wants. Now, virtual machines, because they're virtual, they're made up of several different files. Here's a few of them. The VMX file is the main configuration file. This is what's actually executed by VMware, and it contains things like the virtual machine name, settings, MAC address, hard drive settings, that kind of thing. VMDK is the disk file. It's essentially the virtual machine's hard drive, and it stores all your data that's stored on your virtual machine. VMSN, because of the way virtual machines work, you can create snapshots of them quite easily. So if you want to go screwing about with something, you just create a snapshot of your machine. If it ends up messing up your machine, you can just revert back with no problems at all. And that information is stored in the VMSN file. And then you've got the vmem file, which is your virtual machine's memory. Now, you're not going to see this unless your virtual machine's running or maybe it's crashed. You'll probably see it for some of your snapshots, though. Now, because virtual machines have a disk file, we can look into reading data from that. And the first demo I'll show you will read some data from a disk file and show how important it is that you ensure that this is secured and protected on your network. Right, the tool we're going to use for this is a tool provided by VMware. It's called VMware Mount. Can you read the text on that at the back? Is that okay? Yep, cool. Here, first of all, we're going to take a look at the partition table on the virtual machine. It's a Windows XP machine. You can see that pretty much from the name of the disk file we're specifying. If we run that, we can see that there's just one partition. It's NTFS, which is kind of what we'd expect if it's a Windows machine. Next step is just to mount that. And we do that again with the same command. We specify the partition we want to mount and where we want to mount it to. In this case, we're mounting it to /mount/VMware. Just say yes to them. There you go, we've mounted the drive. If we just change to a new window there. There you go, we can see the contents of our Windows hard drive. So from that we can have a quick play. In this case we'll jump into the system32 config file, our directory. Grab the syskey and then pull out the password hashes. And then from there it's nice and easy just to run a tool like John the Ripper. And we can use that just to crack all the passwords, which is done quite nicely there. Now in this case we went for the password file, for the passwords for the box. We could have gone for anything, any sensitive files. And one thing that's worth noting is because you've got the ability to create snapshots, as soon as you build your virtual machine, all of your files on that are there, and any changes you make are then made on top of that. So that you can revert to your original virtual machine, your original files are still there. So anything you delete on your disk file, it's still there, even if it's not present on the virtual machine. Right, so we've had a look at some of the key concepts of VMware. Next we'll shift on and have a look at VMware Server. Now, VMware Server looks something like this. In fact, it looks exactly like that. That's a screenshot. Now, VMware Server is managed through the console, which is what you can see there. On the left, we've got the inventory, which contains a list of all the virtual machines. And on the right, we've got the window there with the desktop on there. Now, that's all VNC. So if you're administering your VM from the console, be aware that anyone else that's logged onto that server can also watch what you're doing, which is probably part of the reason that VMware recommend that you don't manage your virtual machines from the console. But also, I guess there's some performance issues there if you do. Now, VMware Server will authenticate against the local accounts on the box. So, you know, be careful if you've got guest account enabled, because someone could just jump on your box and browse through it. And whether you can run a virtual machine is kind of down to your file system permissions. So make sure you lock that down as well. Now, if we want to attack VMware Server, the first thing we need to do is spot it on the network. Now, this can be spotted on port 902. That's where VMware authd runs, which is the authentication daemon. If you netcat onto that, you can see in the banner that it's VMware. The rest of the ports, I mean, they could be anything. It depends what else is running on the box. Now, communication with VMware Server looks something like that. This is just us logging into the box. By default, it does use SSL, but if, like me, you don't quite have Bruce and ISFU and can't decrypt SSL in real time, then it's quite useful just to flick that off, and you can do that from the console. Now, VMware provide several tools for managing their systems. For VMware Server, they provide a tool called VMware Command, which comes with VMware Server. It's a nice tool. It's got some useful functionality. It's kind of a pain to use against a large number of systems, or if you want to perform lots of tasks, because you've got to pass the configuration file to it every time. To get around this problem, what I've created is a Ruby module, which essentially allows you to access this functionality. It works as a wrapper around VMware Command. So if you're on a pen test and need to perform lots of actions, or if you're just administering your servers and need to perform lots of actions, that's a useful tool to have. Something else provided for VMware Server is the VIX API. I don't know if any of you have used it. It's quite a powerful API. You can do stuff like transfer files back and forth from the host operating system to the guest operating systems. You can even run programs in the guest operating system if you like. Now, it's got Perl and C bindings. In order to use it, you've got a fair amount of code you need to write. But a lot of the operations that are there, they're not available from the console directly, which is probably the reason that a lot of people I've spoken to don't even realize that functionality exists. One thing that's interesting to note is if you're copying files back and forth using the VIX API, it doesn't use the network, so there's no traffic for someone to detect. It talks directly with the virtual machine. Now, I've written some Ruby bindings for this because when I'm testing, I don't want to sit and write 130 lines of C code. So here, you can see how easy it is to script up with my Ruby code. The first line simply includes the library I've written. The second line there will execute a command within the guest operating system. In this case, it just adds a user, VM user. I don't know if many of you played with Ruby and C, but they talk quite nicely, and essentially you can write all your Ruby code in C if you want, which is kind of useful, especially if you want to play with something low level like memory or something like that. Right, we'll move on to a few demos. These use some of the tools that I've developed, some of the techniques that I've played about with. In order to gain access to a VMware server and the virtual machines. I should probably explain the setup I've got. I've got a network with my laptop connected, and it's from there that we're going to perform the attacks. I've got VMware server running, and on that is a Windows 2003 box. Now we can assume that that 2003 box is completely firewalled off from the rest of the network. In fact, maybe it's even sitting on a different network, so gaining access, we could use that as a proxy onto this new network. Well, the first thing we want to do if we want to get onto the box is to obtain some credentials. Now, the VMware command tool I mentioned earlier, because that allows you to remotely administer and perform actions against servers, one thing you've got to do is log in. So by simply wrapping around that script, we can perform a brute force, because that's got to tell us if our credentials were good or bad. So here we've just brute forced the user account JJ on the box 172.16.93.1. with our dictionary, and you can see at the bottom we've succeeded with the password DEFCON 16. So now we've got some credentials, we can take a bit more of a look at the box and see what else is there. Now, VMware command can pull out a fair amount of info about a box. And using the Ruby module I've written, which essentially wraps around VMware commands, we can pull out a whole load of information. At the top there, you can see we've got a whole list of the virtual machines on the box. We can grab things like the power state and what users are logged on, which is kind of useful. If we can see who's logged on the box, we can see more accounts that we can attack. And at the bottom there, we're reading the config file of this particular virtual machine. It would be nice and easy to loop around and read the config file of every machine. Now, this works by pulling one parameter at a time from the config file, and we've pulled out some useful stuff like in the MAC address. Now, why is that useful? That's useful because if you're attacking a guest operating system, it might well be on the network you're on, and if you can find the MAC address, you can tie that up to an IP address, and then you can attack it from its IP address. Now, I also mentioned that I've written some modules for the Vix API, some Ruby modules, which we can run nice and easily. And I'll show you some of the potential of that now. Now, what I've done is I've created a Metasploit payload, which is a .exe file, which we'll place onto the virtual machine. And because we have the ability to copy files back and forth, that's nice and easy to do. After that, we'll execute it. We've got Metasploit sitting there listening, waiting for this connection to come back. So we'll kick that off now. So first of all, it's got to transfer the file across. In this case, it's called defconl.exe. And you can see that succeeded, and it's executed the program. So now, back in our Metasploit window, we've got a session back. Now, if we interact with that session, we can do all sorts of things with the box. First of all, let's take a look just to make sure everything's worked. And now, using Metasploit, we've pretty much got full access to that box. We've grabbed all the password hashes from the box as well. We could have done pretty much anything we liked. We can transfer files back and forth from it. We can run whatever programs we want. So there's a fair amount of power if you're able to use the Vix API when you're testing. Well, that was VMware Server. We'll take a look at ESX. The ESX architecture is slightly different, and there's some different attack paths. Now, ESX can be administered in many ways. One of them is through a web interface, which is what you can see there. And again, on the left, we've got the inventory. On the right, we've got all the settings for the virtual machines, and we can open up a console from there as well. Alternatively, we can manage it using the virtual infrastructure client. Now, this is a .NET application written by VMware. And it talks SOAP to a web service which is running on the virtual machine. And if you can, I don't know if you can see, but on the right there, there's also a virtual network. ESX has the ability to create virtual networks as well as virtual machines. So that's another thing that we can play about with and attack on an ESX box. Again, if we want to attack ESX, we're going to need to find it first. Because ESX doesn't sit on top of another operating system, all of the ports we can see in the port scanner are relevant because they're ports on the ESX box. The most relevant ports, they kind of depend on what you use it for, but I'd say 443 is pretty important because most of the useful services run on that. One thing interesting about ESX is your ESX boxes are always assigned VMware MAC addresses. No matter what manufacturer your network interfaces are, it's always going to have a VMware MAC address. One thing I haven't mentioned is ESXi, which is kind of similar to ESX. It's a free version. It was made free maybe a week or so ago. It's pretty much, well, I wouldn't say the same as, but it's very similar to ESX. It has fewer services running, but again, you'll be able to detect it on the network through looking at its MAC address and what services are running. Nmap will fingerprint them quite nicely. So the services we have running at /SDK on the web server, that's the SOAP interface, which the VMware virtual infrastructure client talks to, and some of the tools I'll show you in a bit talk to that as well. /UI is where the web interface is, so you can go and have a play with that. /mobs really useful if you're doing any development with the virtual infrastructure API. It shows all of the objects on the ESX server, and you can connect to and talk to them, query them, pull out information, perform tasks. So if you're doing any development, I'm pretty sure you'll play about with that. VMware AuthD still runs on port 902. But there's no VMware Server D, so you can't play about with it as much as you can on VMware Server. And there's also a console operating system which is running Red Hat. And that's what you'll connect to if you connect through SSH. Interestingly, root access is disabled by default for SSH, but if you want to perform a lot of the admin on ESX, chances are you're going to want to log in. So I imagine most people would end up enabling root login for SSH. Right, the virtual infrastructure API, it's got all the functionality you're ever going to need to play about with ESX. Now I've written some tools that talk to this API, which I think are pretty useful when you're pen testing. If you're going to use the tools VMware provide, the majority of it's you're using a GUI, which is a real pain if you want to perform repetitive tasks, particularly if they're against a number of different servers. So it's nice to be able to talk to that directly from a script or whatever. Things like checking security settings across all of your ESX boxes is something you probably want to script up at some point. So yeah, I've written some Ruby code which will talk to this web service, and I think it would be fair to say it's not the nicest web service I've ever played with, but it's pretty powerful. So I'll show you a quick demo of what I've done. Now it wasn't very practical to ship my ESX server over here, so I've had to record it but hopefully it will be clear. I'll show you the output and talk through it afterwards as well. Right, the first thing we're going to do is connect to the box. We can grab things like the version without authenticating. But once we've authenticated, we'll get back a session. And we can perform loads of tasks, list the virtual machines, find out a list of all the users, even identify non-standard users or users with shell access. We can then grab all the network settings. We could play about with the network if we want. Firewall rule sets. One thing that you can do with this that I don't think you can do with the tool provided by VMware is grab a list of all the patches that you might want to apply to that host. So if you want to scan all your ESX boxes and find out which ones need patches, this is quite useful. Right, I'll show you the output from that and we'll talk through that a little bit more because I don't imagine it was massively clear there. Right, I won't go through everything because a lot of it's kind of self-explanatory. So we've got a list of the virtual machines. We can list all the sessions on the box. In this case, there's only one, so it looks like we're the only person connecting. Because the users are users of the Red Hat COS, they're pretty much your standard Linux users, but we can find the non-standard ones, in this case MWI test, but these are the users that are perhaps most interesting because they have shell access. We can then grab all the network settings, stuff like DNS servers, and we can see here that the box has two physical network interfaces. Now here we can see that there's a couple of virtual switches set up. We can see several different networks, so it kind of indicates that they've got some quite good network segregation going on here. We've even got separate VLANs on some of the switches. Now, because your networks are completely virtual and your machines are completely virtual, your ESX server knows which box is where, so we can make use of this to ensure security. The MAC addresses of your virtual machines aren't going to be changing regularly. Your IP addresses, again, aren't going to be changing regularly. And your virtual switches know exactly where your virtual machines are and what they should be doing. So you can disable forged transmissions, MAC address changes. And if you enable these properties, then any traffic that's forged will be dropped by the switch. Which adds another layer of security to your network. Additionally, you probably don't want promiscuous mode enabled on your switches. There's no need for your virtual machines to see traffic destined for the other virtual machines, so we can flick that off. Now, you can see in this instance that these settings aren't particularly secure for most of the interfaces. That's just the default with ESX. We can grab the rule set for the firewall, take a look, see what rules are allowed in and out. By default, there's a default deny inbound and outbound, which is quite nice. Now, if any of you use VMware Server, quite possibly use it as a secondary operating system. Maybe you run Linux as your main operating system and want access to Windows, in which case it's quite nice and useful to be able to copy and paste back and forth between your VM and your main desktop. When you're running a server, probably you don't want the ability for people to copy and paste between the host and the guest operating systems. And you can disable this functionality. The last thing you want is to go copying your root password and someone on one of your guest machines to paste it onto their desktop. So you can set some settings that allow you to do that. By default, these aren't set in ESX, so it's something you need to go out and do yourself. And I mentioned the ability to check the patch levels. Here we can see a fair amount of info on the patches, whether it requires your box to be rebooted afterwards, what patches supersede it, whether it needs you to turn your VMs off afterwards, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of information you can extract here, and this kind of script is probably quite useful if you want to just check the overall security level of all your ESX boxes and whether you've got potential vulnerabilities there. Right, now we're going to move on to a tool called Drardis. Quite possibly a lot of you are sitting there thinking, well, there's quite a lot of scripts there. That's a lot to play with. It would be nice if they were put in a more tidy form. Now, Drardis allows us to do that. We can pull them all together in Drardis and make them nice and useful to us. Now, Drardis is a tool written by a colleague of mine. It's free to download. It's on SourceForge. It's intended for information sharing and structuring of information during a pen test, but it allows various different modules to be plugged into it, and in this case I've plugged in my VMware modules so we can use all of their functionality. Now, it works on a client server architecture. You run the server and anyone can connect to it, add information, read the information, so multiple pen testers can use it if they're on a pen test. It's Ruby based and it's pretty extensible. Like I said, I can add all my VMware modules to it nice and easily. We can use it to put together a methodology for testing VMware networks if we like. Now, it looks something like this. On the left we've got a list of different objects or concepts. On the right we can see the properties of each of these concepts. So on there, I know it's probably a little bit small, but we can see the settings for the firewall. And for those of you that like the command line at the bottom, there's a command line so we can run programs and operations from that as well. There's also a notes tab so we can add notes specific to a host or to a test that we want to share with other testers as well. Now, how does Drardis work? Like I said, we've got concepts. In this case, we have the concepts of a VMware server, of an ESX server, even of a virtual switch or a network interface. And we have various actions that we might want to perform, such as creating a user, rebooting a box, checking the patch level, that kind of thing. And we build all of them into what's described as a universe. So our universe describes all these different concepts and actions. In this case, we've got a VMware universe, but it could be anything. You could have a universe to describe your network, in which case you might have web servers, mail servers, and you might have different actions, such as checking the version or anything like that. And you just plug it in as a module. So let's take a quick look at a demo. Again, because it wasn't possible to ship my ESX box over here, we've had to video it for you. Now, the first thing we want to do is boot the server up. It's running WebBrick, it's the Ruby server. And then fire up Drardis. Like I said, because it's client-server architecture, there could be multiple clients running and talking to the same server. It looks like this. We don't really need the command line at the bottom, so we'll just move that down for now to give more space. Right, our concepts are on the left. So in this case, we'll create the concept of an ESX server. Now, the properties of an ESX server, in this case, is just the version and IP address. So we'll give it the IP address of our ESX server. There's no reason you couldn't extend one of the modules to detect ESX servers on your network as well. Now, we have properties for these concepts as well. In this case, we've got a version property. So performing that action, we can grab the version of the ESX server. In order to log on to an ESX box, we need some credentials, and surprisingly, there's a username and password. So we'll enter them in. So we got a question: if we didn't have credentials, What if we didn't have them? Well, let me just pause the demo for a sec. If we don't have credentials, then we're more limited in the actions we can perform. There's a small amount of information we can grab from an ESX box. Most of the information you're going to need credentials, assuming there's no vulnerability that lets you grab information from it first. So for the purpose of this, we're working with credentials, but credentials can come at several different user levels, so it might be worth running checks with different user levels to see whether your permissions are set up properly, that kind of thing. Okay. In this case, yes, it would, because port 902 is open and running. So the question was, would the tool I showed you for brute forcing authentication work? And the answer is yes, it would, against this box, because it's got port 902 open. Alternatively, we could have brute forced the web service as well, because that has a login function, and we could attack it through that. Also, we could brute force SSH. So there's a variety of different options for trying to obtain credentials. And then there's also the possibility that they share credentials across boxes. If we look at the case where we mounted the hard drive, maybe some of the credentials we found then would be valid here as well. Okay, so just jumping back here, we've logged in and we've got back a session ID. Next, we're going to take a quick look at the firewall, see if there's any dodgy rules in there that might let us jump onto the box through other means. So we'll populate the firewall rule set settings. And I mean, we've seen these before from the script, but it's a pretty default firewall rule set. And we can take a look at some of the authentication settings. Here we'll grab a list of sessions that are active on the server, and we'll grab some of the non-default users as well, because their accounts are normally quite interesting to attack. And here we can see there's several sessions to the box, so probably we're not the only person using it at this time. And the next thing we're going to take a look at is the patching. We'll find out what patches need applying on this box. Now, in order to check the patch level, you need a repository which contains the patches. In this case, our repository is on a web server. And the web server structure, it contains all the patches and the downloads. It takes a moment or two to run because it's got to scan the web server for that information. It will return at some point. Okay, it's come back and we've got some details of the patch, patches which need applying, which we can see there. And again, we've got information such as whether we need to reboot the box and that kind of thing. Right, so let's move on to some recommendations. You've seen some potential attack vectors. If you're running VMware on your network, you know, what should you do? Well, the first thing to note is nothing I've shown you today gives you access to the box without some weakness being exploited. But perhaps there's vulnerabilities in VMware that we could exploit as well to get on there. So it's important that we ensure the box is secure in the first place. So how do we do that? Well, VMware's written some really good documentation on securing, in particular ESX. It's not a bad read, so it's definitely worth having a look through if you've got ESX or server deployed. You need to ensure that your updates are there. I know it's one of those things that's always said, but there's been a few advisories released. iDefense and Core have put out some stuff recently. And also, because the COS is running Red Hat, all of the Red Hat vulnerabilities also need patching as well. So it's important to ensure that you keep on top of this. And also defence in depth steps you've taken to protect yourself. VMware is always going to be a nice target for attackers. And because it's probably running several of your servers, it's important that this, if there's one place on your network that you go out of your way to protect, then it really should be your VMware boxes. And also don't forget things like VMware tools, which are running on your guest machines. They do leave the potential for attack. Like I said, VMware is always going to be a juicy target for an attacker. One of the key things that VMware bang on about, and quite rightly so, is to keep your management network separate from your corporate LAN. The attacks we've seen today are all focused against the management networks. If they're not there, then the attacks, quite simply, they just can't be performed. And as I mentioned earlier, disable MAC address changes, disable promiscuous mode, ensure your box is as secure as they possibly can be and your network's as secure as they can be. It's unlikely that you're going to want to change MAC addresses regularly on your guest machines. And also, as I mentioned, disable copy and paste between your virtual machines. If they're servers, it's probably something you don't need. And if you've got a CD drive on your ASX server or your VMware server, disable the guest machines from reading that. Last thing you want to do is put something sensitive in your CD drive, which everyone connected to one of the guest machines can also see. VMware's documentation states that only port 443 and port 80 are needed for general operation of your server. So if your deployment doesn't need access to any of the other ports, then close them off in the firewall. One thing worth noting is that guest operating systems do write their logs to the ESX server. So it's important you make sure that they're rotated and tidied up pretty regularly. Last thing you want is for your file system to fill up through a malicious user filling up your log files. Future work. Well, I've still got plenty to play with. I found some pretty interesting stuff, which I'll chat to VMware about sometime soon. I'll publish it all when it's done. But there's still a lot of technologies that VMware have produced that I've not played with. I've not played with vMotion, for example. It's something I'm definitely going to look at in the future. Well, to conclude, I mean, the tools I've shown you, they're all going to be made available. They didn't quite make it onto the DEF CON CD because they weren't ready in time. But they're available to download, or will be very shortly, from my website or mwrinfosecurity.com. Drardis, the tool I showed you, you can download from SourceForge. That's drardis.sourceforge.net. So yeah, go away, have a play, see what's useful to you. If there's something that you think could be implemented, drop me a mail. I'll have a look into it. Right, I'm moving into QA room to take questions, but we've got a few moments if people want to fire anything at me. We have a question. The question was, by default, is there an account lockout on server and ESX? Not that I've come across. I guess it depends on the settings you've got on your box. One thing that I should have pointed out, which I haven't, is the auth daemon that runs on VMware server, by default, under Linux, it will run through inetd or xinetd. If it runs through inetd, then after about 250-odd request to log in, inetd will stop the service listening, so you can cause a denial of service through doing that. So make sure you run VMware authd on through inetd, or if you're going to attack it, that you will ensure it's running on xinetd before you do. But back to the original question, sorry. Account lockout is down to whether you've set it. I've not seen account lockout on either ESX or VMware server. Definitely not enabled by default, no. Sorry?
Doesn't it have Tally by default?
By default, server doesn't, no.
Which slide?
That info is on the CD, yeah. Right, I'll move through to QA room if anyone else has got any more questions.